Okay. Hello, this is Imani Jamal. I'm interviewing the president-elect of AMUSE, Jennifer Olmsted. It is November 17. We are at Mesa in New Orleans, 2019, and it's a great pleasure, Jennifer, to have you.
Thank you.
Okay, Jennifer, why do you think AMUSE was founded and needed?
I think that there was a growing interest in gender studies and women's studies around the time that it was founded, and people felt that there wasn't enough space maybe in other venues. So I definitely think it was needed, and it's really created a great community in the sense that it was a great way for people to network and really connect. So I wasn't there when it was actually founded, so I don't really know exactly what the history is of founding.
So what role do you think AMUSE has had in feminist gender studies of the Middle East?
So in the early years, they had a newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And that newsletter was really quite valuable. It talked about pedagogy. We had book reviews. Eleanor D'Amato, I believe, was the first editor. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that publication was so valuable because it really connected people in the region with people in like the West. And so there was a lot of good discussions, I think, between scholars globally. I took over editing that newsletter, and that's how I really became involved with AMUSE. I was a student of Saad Joseph's, and so she really pulled me in when I was a grad student. And for me, it was really exciting because I was in economics, which is a very isolating space when it comes to both gender studies and Middle East. There's very little support for either of those areas. So for me, AMUSE was a welcome place where I actually could find people that understood the research I did, because I didn't feel that I had that kind of home in economics. Although now there's a feminist economics group, so that obviously became a second home for me as well. So I think the newsletter was really great, but people started to feel the limits of the newsletter, and they really wanted to move to more peer-reviewed place. And so JMUSE was a huge change for AMUSE, right? Because we switched from just having the Middle East Women's Studies Review, which was the newsletter, to having a full-fledged journal. And that was it was a difficult time, right, when the journal was being created, because we weren't sure what the demand was going to be. There was a lot of apprehension about shifting away from a kind of more cozy, newsy, sort of collegial type of exchange to this more formal structure. And I think I remember those days because, actually, Amanda, you were on the board as well then, and there was a lot of nervousness, but I'm just so proud of what's happened. It's really amazing. I mean, JMUSE, clearly there was a need, right? We weren't sure if there was a need when we actually started this project, but clearly there was a need because we just had the last report, and there's a steady stream of submissions. There's a lot of libraries interested. We've got solid membership. So it's really exciting to see the organization transition from an organization that was really about networking and pedagogy to one that's more really about supporting scholarship, I would say.
That's wonderful. So do you feel that JMUSE is putting the Association of Middle East Women's Studies on the map in certain ways?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so. Again, I feel like we didn't know what the demand was going to be. I think AMUSE was somewhat invisible to a lot of members. But now genders, you know, I mean, part of this is gender studies in general has become much more mainstream, not just in Middle East, but I think globally. The UN has picked up on this importance of women's equality, and there's just a lot more discussion of gender. I feel like what's happened at Mesa is kind of an amazing transformation too, because I really see a shift in the membership, and I think that JMUSE kind of mirrors that sort of more openness about gender and sexuality and more discussions of these topics than was historically.
Wonderful. I mean, one of the things that people will often say is that there were the good old days where they had the newsletter And as you mentioned, the newsletter was really great in terms of sharing the news of the members, creating this sense of community, putting people into contact with one another. Do you think that the move from there was inevitable, or is there a way to sort of resurrect that camaraderie?
That's a great question. And I'm not sure. So for me as the editor, being the editor of the Emmys Review was absolutely amazing. I got to know so many people because I was reaching out to people. And for me personally, it was an amazing period in Emmys. And I probably knew more members then than I do now, because as the editor, I was constantly looking for content. I was emailing people. I was pulling stuff in. Mm-hmm. I was really actively. So I felt like I knew everybody who was involved in Middle East Women's Studies. I think the field has grown a lot. So it's a tricky question. I do think that there was a little bit of a loss. I do think, like, we used to have more conversations about pedagogy on a very much more sort of, hey, what are you doing with your students? What's working? What's not? And I feel like that's a little bit less around. We did, I think, try for an online newsletter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it didn't, you know, part of the problem is just getting people to volunteer and step up. And I do think, yeah, there was a worry that so much energy would go to JMuse that AMuse as an organization would disappear. But I think that the recent solution of doing joint receptions, for example, has really revitalized things. And the reception that we went to this year, it was so great to see different generations of scholars and different scholars interacting across different disciplinary interests. So I think that, yes, there was a difficult period, but that maybe AMuse is moving into a new stage where they've now kind of rethought, okay, we can't go back to the old days, but here's a new model that's working. So I do think there was a period where people were a little nervous. And, you know, you lose people and you gain people. And I've been also really active with International Association for Feminist Economics, and that's gone through a similar transition. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, that organization has become much more professionalized, I would say, than AMuse. And there is this tension where, you know, how professional do you get, and do you lose that sort of homey feel? So that's something I think AMuse will have to continue to negotiate, because as you have success, you sort of have to professionalize. And then you have to think about, what are we gaining and what are we losing? So I think receptions are a way to regain that kind of cozy thing. I think having roundtables, the fact that at the last minute they came up with this idea to do the roundtable around the protests, that kind of innovation is important, because that's the way that you kind of keep in touch with people. So I think as long as we think of new ways to maintain those networks, we should be okay.
Wonderful. Can you talk a little bit more about the influence of AMuse on your own research, teaching, and scholarship?
So I feel like one of the most important pieces that I published was in JMuse. So that was really exciting to have a piece that reached, because a lot of my work actually doesn't reach the Middle East crowd, because I'm publishing in journals like Feminist Economics, which maybe are not things that MESA and AMuse members look at regularly. So for me, I feel like that piece really established me as a scholar. And so I think that was really important, like getting, I think one of the challenges, because we're so interdisciplinary, is like, where do you put your stuff, and where do you want to be visible? So for me, JMuse was super important because it gave me visibility that I didn't have before, because I'm in a discipline that is not that common at MESA. I also feel like there have been articles, obviously, that were important for me. So, you know, reading other people's scholarship is also really valuable as well.
So it's one of those journals that you're always accessing.
Yeah, it's definitely something where I can see I can keep my pulse on what's happening in the field, which is great.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of your involvement? You mentioned that you were the newsletter editor, but if you sort of think about the members of AMuse who were instrumental in getting you involved, and you kind of stuck with it for so many years, can you tell us about the existing membership of AMuse and whether or not that was a motivation to stay on for so long.
Yeah, so I was a graduate student at University of California, Davis, and so obviously I met Suad Joseph, and she was a great mentor for me. And she was definitely one of the people who motivated, but the other person who was really important person for me was Eleanor D'Amato. I had met Eleanor as a child. She was somebody who knew my parents because I grew up in Lebanon, and so there was a family connection. So I think between Eleanor D'Amato and Suad Joseph, they were the people that pulled me in. And definitely when I came back from my field work in Palestine, it was very isolating, first to be back in the States. It's a very jarring juncture to go from this very intimate situation where you're doing field work and you're in the middle. I was in the middle of, you know, the Intifada and a lot of really politically intense stuff, to come back to the States. So Suad really played a role in helping me to actually get the dissertation done, because I was in a field that was very, very quantitative, and I didn't know how to make sense of the data because I had collected it myself. And most economists don't collect their own data. They just pull data off of the internet. And so for me, it was super important to have that space to be able to think about qualitative, like how do I meld the qualitative information that I had with the quantitative. So Suad played a really important role in that. And then, of course, Amani, you came on board, and I think you and I were a great team for many years. So Suad and Eleanor were the ones who pulled me in, but I would say you are the person who kept me going. You know, like, so just, you know, I remember the days when we looked at our bank account and we had, like, no money in our bank account, and we thought, how are we going to keep this organization going, right?
Right, right.
So I feel like you and I really were in it together for a long period of time where we were, I mean, the organization did struggle, and that was another thing that's important to keep in mind. Like, now Jamie's is really successful, but right, there were a hard couple of years there, not just a couple, right?
So we were in the red for so many years and would have to rely on donations and creative ways of fundraising.
Yeah, and we had to be very, we had period of austerity. We had a long period of austerity. So, you know, I mean, I feel like I learned a lot about organizational culture. I learned a lot about how to run an organization. Like, you and I redid the bylaws too, right? So we learned about governance. It was really like a learning process to figure out budgeting, finances, governance. And both of us were quite young, grad school to like post-grad school. And I was at University of Michigan. So that was the other way that you and I connected, because I was at University of Michigan, Flint. And you were also in Michigan at that time. So there were some geographical things that kind of helped to create those connections. But I have to say, I'm so proud of where AMUS is now and the fact that And I wasn't sure we were going to make it. Like, I had moments where I was kind of worried about the future of AMUS. I think the other big struggle that you and I have talked about so many times is, and this is something that's written up in the literature. Now I actually teach about, like, political economy of nonprofits. And so I've been thinking about theorizing this stuff. How do you transition from a new organization where things are really intimate and everybody knows each other to an organization that's more professionalized and where you have multiple generations of scholars? And I think one of the things that we struggled with a lot, and you and I talked about a lot, was how do we make the younger generation feel engaged? And I do think AMU still has some work to do around that, right? I mean, this is probably thinking about the future.
Right.
We need to think about ways to actually make sure that the intergenerational dialogue is strengthened.
So on that note, as incoming president, do you have any ideas and thoughts on how AMUS might accomplish this or do things a little different that might end up with more robust results, if you may?
So I actually, you know, a few years ago, I would have been much more stronger in terms of my, like, this is what we shouldn't be doing. I feel like AMUS has actually made a lot of that transition, in the sense that we used to have a meeting where the senior people would be honored and a senior person would speak, and it just was not working for a lot of the people. So I feel like in a way some of that transition's already happened. I think going to a reception where we pull in different organizations. Now, I think that we need to think, so the next step is thinking about how we can maybe like creatively think about a future together with other organizations. Because I feel like we've benefited and that these other organizations are now with us, but it doesn't necessarily mean that our membership has gotten stronger. Right. So maybe we need to think a little bit more about cooperations and think about ways that we can jointly feature more junior scholars. Because right, I still right. think that is a struggle. I think, again, doing like workshops, doing roundtables where you really feature more junior voices is something we need to continue to do. And so I've been trying to think about what would I want to do in terms of programming. I think the other thing that's really innovative and I'm really happy is that we're now reaching out to the region more, because there was definitely that isolation where people, I think, in the region felt like this is not our organization. It's kind of a North American organization. So I think the fact that we're having the conference in Beirut is absolutely phenomenal. And I think, so I feel like as president, the two things that I should actually sort of push forward even more are, how are we going to sort of maintain the success of thinking more internationally and really being more present in the region? And how can we further harness these new synergies that we have with other organizations and maybe think about some joint programming, think about ways that we can really pull in a new group of people that we maybe haven't heard from historically?
Excellent. Jennifer, are there any other thoughts or last minute thoughts that you'd like to add to the interview? This has been great.
No, I feel like we covered it all, and I'm really excited to be president-elect. I feel like there's a great new, that's the other thing. I feel like even in terms of the board, we've made a transition too, that we've got some newer and younger members that are stepping up. So I do feel like there has been, like, we haven't completed that path, but we're getting there, where we're sort of becoming more intergenerational. So that's great.
That's awesome, Jennifer, and I look forward to working with you as president-elect, and
that's good.
It's really great to have you, and this has been a great interview. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Imani.